Hi, everybody. My name is Mandy. Hi. Hey, good afternoon. I'm in Colorado, so it's always neat to see people in other states. I came into OA in 2002 at the age of 19 years old and have been in OA since. So I'm now 43. which is weird to say, sometimes. I'm gonna just start off this talk with what I do because I think it's helpful. Like, what do you do? Like, how do you stay abstinent? So this is what I do today, and then I'll kind of reverse engineer and say how I got to this place. So when it comes to food, and I can send this to you too. I have like a little, I did some writing around it recently and kind of clarify for myself, and I'm happy to text this out or whatever if anybody's interested, if you can read my handwriting. But mission, vision, values, those are kind of buzzwords in the business world. But I thought, like, what is my mission, vision, values related to food? What are the overarching things that I want to be food to be for my life? So I put, here's my values and what I want this to be. This is about health. This is about wellness. This is about enjoyment with food. It's not punitive or restrictive or denying myself. It's about enjoyment with food. It's communal, so it's not in isolation. It's nourishing. I need it to be simple, so an element of simplicity and healthy. I need it to be reasonable. It can't be that OA is not my religion anymore. Like, it has to fit my life. I have two young boys and I'm married and I work full time, so it has to be reasonable. And then it has to be accessible to all. And what I mean when I say that is, if I'm sponsoring a new mom, or if I am a new mom, or if I'm sponsoring somebody who works at night, or if I'm sponsoring somebody whose culture wants them to eat certain things, or whose culture doesn't want them to eat certain things, or their religion does or doesn't want them to eat certain things, or they don't have the money to do certain things, or they have a medical issue. Like, this should work for wherever somebody is at. So those are kind of the overarching principles and values that I try to line things up with. And I look to, like, is this working for me? It's not just for me a black and white, did I check a box or not? It's also like, does this keep me mentally healthy? Does this allow me a voice in my own life? Does this give me power and agency and autonomy in how I live my life? Or am I just swallowing what my sponsor tells me to do and having her be my God? So that's kind of what I mean when I say that. How that actually looks shows up in the disciplines related to tools and food, I'll share that with you too, but please be mindful. I'm saying that has what's evolved for me. I'm not saying that is a one and done for everybody. And I'm not saying that's what it will look like in 5 or 10 years for me, but I can tell you what I do today. And this might not be what you need to do or what works for you. So again, is it workable for you? But today what I do is I do 3 meals a day. I don't eat flour or added sugars or sweeteners in any form. Or like starches, things like that, like corn starches, I don't do that in general. And when I go to a restaurant, though, I say those same things. I say to a restaurant, I'd like no, those I don't want those things, but I tell them, like, that's my preference. To me, it's not a hill I'm gonna die on. Some people, it is a hill they're gonna die on, but I've had experience in restaurants where they made a mistake and they gave me one of those things and I didn't even notice. So I just always have to be cognizant of, is it working or not? And that being said, one other principle I'll say is, whatever plan or system or structure or lifestyle I'm going to choose as a human being, I will say this that I think is true for me and for you. As a human being, it needs to involve room for mistakes, room for failure, room for exploration, room for experimentation, room for growth, room for authenticity and vulnerability. If my plan does not allow for that, it is not a human-centered plan. So I will say that. So, and I think that's true categorically. And so also, I weigh my food at home. When I go to a restaurant or things like that, I don't weigh my food. I just simply ask for those things I said, like when I say at the restaurant, like, I don't want sweeteners or added sugars or flour, what do you have available? And they'll say, oh, we can do this. We'll just put this on the side for you, or we'll just do this without this. I'm like, perfect. And then I eat that. And it has worked really well. Same thing, this is a new step for me, is like when I travel, I follow that restaurant protocol. things previously. I used to try to make my food as perfect in when I traveled as it is at home, perfect. Like with weight and stuff like that. And I found like I stopped wanting to travel. I stopped wanting to live life. I stopped wanting to dream because I was like, oh, I can't go there because I'm not, it'll be such a hassle to get the food the way I need it to be. And I don't want to live like that, right? I shouldn't shut down my dreams and my life so that I can be abstinent. Like abstinence is a practice and a means to an end. And in fact, I don't even like using the term abstinence because it calls out what I'm not doing. I'd rather call out what I am doing. Like I'm living this big life. I have all these modalities of well-being, of which OA is one tool in my toolkit, but it's no longer my whole toolkit. So I don't want to focus on what I'm not doing. Like I want to focus on all the cool things to do. What else? This is important to me too, that I eat in community. And I mean, like sometimes if I'm at work, I eat by myself or things like that. But what was happening was I'd go out with my family, and if they spontaneously wanted to go to a restaurant, I'd say no. Like I didn't plan for that. I need to eat my way to make food at home. So I'd sit with them, and like my kids would be eating, my husband would be eating, and then I'd go home and eat. Or I'd go to this event, and unexpectedly there'd be food there, or there'd be dinner there. But I'd be like, no, I can't. Like I have to wait and do my food my way at home. And I'm like, I can't do that anymore. I need this to be integrated in my life. Like I can't have separate everything else out. Like food is, it's different, right, than alcohol. It's different than drugs. Like food, it needs to be integrated. So now if there's something that comes up spontaneously in community, then I try to make it work. Like, oh, can I have this without that? Or just trying to make it work. And to the best of my ability, there's always another meal coming. I used to do a prescribed 3 outgoing calls a day to people in program. Now that's different. I just stay integrated in program. If you're new, you might need to work that muscle and develop that muscle memory of making calls. But now I just make sure I stay integrated in program. And also I stay integrated in life. So what was happening again too is I'd be focusing on making my 3 phone calls a day, and I don't call my sister, I don't call my friend in Michigan because she doesn't count as a call, right? So, but now it's like I set aside the rules and I try not to be legalistic. I have disciplines, but like I stay integrated in life. So now I do pick up the phone and call my friend in Michigan. I call the coworker that I was thinking about who lost her job. I call my husband, right? Like he's like, can I be an OA just so you'll call me? I'm like, what is that? Like, that's not right, right? Like, you don't want to, like, can you count me as a phone call just so you talk to me? So like looking at what is this about? So I just try to stay integrated in life and stay integrated in community. I used to do 3 meetings a week. Now I just do one recovery meeting a week, and I'm in other fellowships too, because that could be other fellowships. But I was going to like literally, I was like at in one point in 8 different fellowships where, like, I identified as a food addict. I identified like, and I won't name all these other programs, but like, I'm like this because I thought I had to fix all these things about myself, that I had to fix my love issues, I had to fix my emotion issues, I had to fix my clutter issues, I had to fix my codependency issues, I had to fix all these issues. And now I'm like, if you need to go to 8 programs, you're probably not getting to the root issue. So, and I don't have time to work all those programs. I to address my work compulsion issues. So, I just try to do one recovery meeting a week. And so I'm grateful to be here too. I try to think of literature as keeping my mind open, and I think of it like as discovery. So literature that holds me accountable but teaches me new ways of thinking. Meditation and prayer is part of my daily discipline, and that looks different on different days. And sometimes that includes like some light yin yoga stretching to open my body so I'm just not sitting there. But sometimes that includes praying hard because something's going on, or sometimes that means resting because my body hurts or I'm extra tired, so I'm just going to lay down again for 30 minutes. I work the steps. I do kind of a slight tweaking on the steps. I think my opinion is the steps, a perspective can be that they're patriarchal and hierarchical. I love the principles of the steps, but some of the wording on the steps is a little hard for me to swallow. So I work a version of the steps that works for me and also includes that it's a two-way street. It's not just my wrongs. I also have to, like, all relationships are two-way. So I don't just swallow somebody harming me. Like, I speak up about it too. And that I do life with friends and family. But what I'm looking for is this middle way of discipline and structure, but with love and compassion and truth in this middle way of like workability. So then I'll start to tell you my story, but I just wanted to make sure I led with that, like that the why, the how, the what, because that's always kind of the mystery. People say these things, but it's like, what are you actually doing? What do you put in your mouth? So here's to me, these things embody what I have found to be critical for recovery. And it's not always like a legalistic checklist. I'll just speak for myself. I need to be involved in community in some way. That has to have some level of healthy accountability. Meaning like I don't need a sponsor being punitive or telling me what to do. I need an equitable dynamic where we have equal power, but I'm owning my life. And I need somebody to say like, oh, hey, Mandy, I thought you had this intention for yourself. And it seems like your actions are out of line with an intention. Let's talk about that. Let's get curious about that. Let's be non-judgmental about that and explore that. Like, what's going on for you? Like, I need community. And I need others. I can't do it all myself. So that's a key. For me, some level of structure and discipline. But also, my big thing, like my background is high levels of perfectionism, high levels of OCD, high levels of body image issues, high levels of, and that's not who I am, but those can be my tendencies. And just like some anxiety, depression, and stuff like that. So that's why I don't call myself a food addict anymore. And you can if you want to, but my identity got so wrapped up in food, being calling myself a food addict. That's all I thought I was. But I'm so many things, of which working on food is a part of it. So I'm a mom and a daughter and a wife, and I'm just me, and I'm a human, and I breathe air. And sometimes I act totally reasonably, sometimes I act totally normally, sometimes I'm wise and smart and funny and have good things and competent things to do and say at work. Sometimes I fail and struggle, and like it's all part of a package. So that was important to me, like that how I show up and how I identify. I'm trying to think like what other, and you see the principles are show up in the steps and the tools of community and kind of self-reflection, self-awareness, having a higher power or divinity or spirituality that has morphed for me over time. Now, like I believe, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I kind of believe now, like same water, different jar, right? That like I go to places that give me goosebumps. And that's these meetings. That's whenever I hear somebody speaking their truth. That's when I go to a Buddhist monastery. That's when I go to a Quaker meeting. That's when I just hear truth spoken and hear people striving to change or be different or to accept or to love or to have compassion. So I'm thinking through the tools. So those are kind of the tools and the principles and the steps and the structure. And now I'm going to rewind and tell you my story, how I got here. So, like I said, I came into OA in 2002 when I was 19. I was halfway through college. I was obese. And I'd been obese my whole life. My family was one of, we didn't have like abuse in that typical sense. And I think my parents did the best they could, but there's definitely dysfunction and addiction. My dad was addicted to cigarettes and gambling and like money mismanagement and food. And my mom was like a shopaholic. And again, not to label them either, right? They had their tough stuff. And all that we say, I think, needs to be trauma informed. Like, this isn't bad people. It's like we had things in our lives that helped us lean into things to cope with. And for some people, food lights them up. For some people, alcohol lights them up. But I've been overweight my whole life. I remember going on my first diet as an 8-year-old. And that was third grade. My dad was overweight and he'd always chart out his weight loss plan. He'd make this graph and have this slope, and he'd like for first few days be going down the graph, and his was more like a starving mentality. But then he'd go off and the graph would stay up for a long time in the bathroom mirror. So like I look back at like little girls now who are 8 years old, I'm like, they do not need to be thinking about diets. They do not need to be thinking about losing weight. I remember as an 8-year-old looking down at my stomach and being like, okay, I think it's getting flatter. And as an 8-year-old, you don't need to be doing that. So I also say this too, because part of this package, and if you don't mind me going, this is systemic. We live in a culture where cheap, crappy food is easy, right? And we're body image and women and objectification, like it's all a package. I'm saying that partly like it's not all your fault. It's not all my fault, right? Like, of course I was going to end up here. Like, I had no other source of truth except to eat my way through life. That's what I knew. So, of course, I was going to end up in this situation. I had no other defenses against it. And so, like, that just got progressively worse. It led into exercise bulimia. It led into trying to restrict. It led into envy of anorexics because at least they were thin. I wouldn't think that way today. And it led into constant, like, binging, starving cycles, to the point where, like, by the time I was 19, I was just scared to eat because it had progressed to the point where every meal became a binge because I didn't know how to control it, and it became just about control. And I thought that's what it took to get a handle on this food thing. I just had to try harder and control harder and will myself harder, like, surely, because I didn't know what else there was. And I started going to eating disorder therapy. I was in college, but I finally came home and I looked up about eating disorders online, and I saw OA's website. And it struck me as curious because food is only mentioned once in the first step and never again, and like kind of this level of spirituality. So I started going to meetings. And in those meetings were, being mindful how I describe this, highly structured and highly accountable. Like, there was and is a certain way that you work program, which was 3 meals a day, no flour, no sugar, weigh and measure, 3 phone calls a day, 3 meetings a week. Like, talk to your sponsor at the same committed time daily if you're new. And that worked for me. But what happened, I lost the weight. So when I came into program, I'm 5'7". I probably was like 180 or 190. Now I'm about 135. So I went from like the 180s, although I don't know my top weight, down to 140 in 4 months, I think. But here's what also happened with that I'm just trying to be honest about and reconcile in my life. What happened was OA became my religion and my dogma and my rhetoric and my identity and my all in all. And that way, those tools became my good enough scale. It kept me sober and abstinent. And I see that I have 2.5 minutes left. But it kept me here and it kept a cast on me. And after a while, like, there's a time and a place for a cast in a healthy form, but you can't live in the cast forever. And I started, in spite of me, outgrowing the cast. Like, I got married and I was still doing that. I had 2 babies, 2 abstinent pregnancies. My sons are 5 and 2, and I was still doing that. But with pregnancy, and also when the pandemic happened, and I won't get into politics, but like, I started seeing, like, with pregnancy especially, I had to eat differently just because my body was so nauseous. And I had to make intuitive decisions when before I would commit my food and write it down the night before and then say what it was. But I was like, wait a second. I'm not going off the deep end here. Something's wrong. Like, I've been told all these things I have to do and I shouldn't do. But when left to my own devices, there's an element of myself that I can trust and that does want to be well and doesn't always have to be told what to do. And so I started being like, what's up with that? And so I started asking questions and looking into things more. And that's what this has evolved into. Like, I still value that structure and that discipline, but I can't live in that state of hypervigilance anymore. Like, it just, and I don't mean to be disparaging, like, some people need that and thrive off of it, and they don't go into an OCD neurotic place about it like I did. It just helps them, like, get some strength and some structure in. But for me, there needs to be space for me to be a human and explore. And I see I have less than a minute left. So, like, that's what's evolved over, like, over the years and over working program. And it's scary, right? It's scary because there's this quote that I love that's like, better your own theory, however messily applied, than to follow somebody else's theory perfectly. Something along those lines. And like, first you follow the rules, then you break the rules, then you create your own rules in a healthy, structured way for me. So I'm not going off the deep end, but that's kind of how my journey has been up to this point. So it's kind of this new phase I've been exploring the past year or two. And I still have discipline and structure, but it's livable, right? Like, abstinence is a path, that's not a destination, and this is a way of life and a practice. This isn't a goal, and maybe I'll stop there. Thanks.